Oh, yeah. Taking a nice pre-show stretch. You know, the hamstrings get very tight. Do your hamstrings get tight?
Always, because I train legs twice a week now.
Do you?
Yes, sir.
I do a lot of cardio, so technically I'm working my legs at least 3 times a week.
I just want sexy quads.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like, I want, when I wear my little underwears that I wear, my Armani Exchange or Emporio Armani underwear.
Yeah.
I want to see just separation in my quads.
I don't know if I know exactly what quads are.
Quads are these muscles right here.
Oh, yeah. I have good ones of those.
Yeah.
You have good quads? I think so.
Nice.
You know what? I put work in.
I've started doing that.
As you know, I'm a professor. And I...
Really? I didn't know that.
I just want you to make sure. I train for my job. People think, oh, why not study more, read more? No. I'm on the treadmill. That's how I prepare for my work. Because I work in what's basically the public school equivalent of college, where you've got, I don't know, 300 students in a class that's supposed to have, I don't know, maybe 20.
Yeah.
So you've got to run around and fucking put on a vaudeville act.
I've seen you. You do hand puppets and you move around. Yeah, you do a whole thing.
You know, I mean, I'm a little bit like Bill Hicks during his UFO tour. I'm losing them every 5 seconds and I'm trying to get them back.
I just want to look as menacing and intimidating, but have a factor of cool when I teach my after-school programs with my children.
First of all, you need a leather jacket.
I have one. I have worn one.
So you could be the cool teacher like from Boy Meets World. What was that guy's name?
Jonathan Turner.
Wow. First name as well.
Yeah.
Deep cut. This is PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children.
Hi.
We are here once again. I am so glad to be talking to you folks. To my right is my good friend, co-host, and co-pilot, the Chewbacca, to my Han Solo. Not bad. Mr. Emilio Sparks. I used to date a girl who did a great Chewbacca, but like only one specific Chewbacca. It was in from Empire Strikes Back when Han, they think Han's dead and they have to close the doors and Chewbacca like looks up and like does a Chewbacca roar in great pain. She would do that all the time.
Is it the great pain because she was dating you, or is it just...
Oh, I imagine so. For a guy who's seen 1.5 Star Wars movies, you've got a pretty decent Chewbacca.
I learned that, I can't lie, in high school. I heard my classmates just do this sound, and I was like, what are you doing? They go, oh, we're just doing the Wookiees. I'm like, what the fuck is the Wookiees?
What's a Wookiee?
And they were like, I can't get into that right now, but do the sound. I was like, how do you do the sound? Just roll your little hangy ball. So I was just like,
not bad at it.
We'll get into this. But I guess he sees his friends or his constituents or his family in that mining town in the new one. And he
Chewbacca's constituents, yes.
And he looks at Han. He looks at Han and he yells out the, come on, motherfucker. Can I go, please?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out the different vocal tones of his pain.
What you saw in that scene in Solo was very different, because he usually is not that animated. You see a different side of Chewbacca in this movie. He rips someone's arms off, which is a joke that they make in the first movie, but you never see it happen. And we finally, after 30 movies and 40 years, saw Chewbacca straight up rip somebody's arms off.
Well, you saw him holding the arms. You technically didn't see him.
You heard it.
Yeah.
And the fans knew what was happening.
Okay.
We were like, oh, shit, he's...
Right. We'll get into that, because I actually saw this movie on my own.
I'm glad. I'm proud of you.
All right. It's time for the news. Oh, because we're all over the place because we're excited here. Let me introduce the sugar to my tea. The lovely green eyed Hazel Bandit, Michael Buongiorno.
Hello, welcome. Let's go to the news.
One day we'll tell them the story about how we got that sound effect.
You stole it from CBS FM.
Yeah, pretty much.
Basically, can you? Can you trademark a sound? I don't think so.
I don't know. If you listen to the morning show, you'll hear that religiously.
Well, it's good. It connotates news. So sadly, at the tender age of 69, we lost Margot Kidder. I'll say the best Lois Lane. People think of her as like older because those movies are from the 70s.
It's been like 5. That's about it.
But
2 were animated.
Yeah. Amy Adams I don't think she's a bad actress, but I don't know what the fuck she's doing in those new movies, other than she's about as charismatic as wallpaper in those movies. She was the first Lois Lane that wasn't just like, hey, somebody tied me to a railroad track, come and help me. She was the first one who could defend herself, gave him shit.
Oh, she was a feminist.
She was the first Lois Lane who like was like a real icon for young women. And she did something clever that I think a lot of people don't give credit, which is in her performance in Superman, at least Superman 1, she does this really interesting thing where when she's with Superman, she looks at him because she's attracted to him. But when she's with Clark Kent, she never looks at him. She's looking at her purse. She's looking ahead. She's kind of ignoring him. He's kind of like running behind her. Watch the movie again. She never really looks at Clark, which is brilliant because it shows why she wouldn't recognize Superman as Clark, because she's not even looking at Clark. He's like invisible to her. But then when he's Superman, she can't look anywhere else.
She really defined that role, because if you watched the animated series
with Dana Delaney
and the way they play Lois Lane there, she's very type A. She's very alpha dog.
Yeah, I think her performance changed the character. She became – she was no longer a damsel in distress. She would give shit to Clark. So
they never changed it in the comic book, which kind of sucks.
In some ways, there's been so many different versions of Lois, and then she had her own
stuff
alone.
Still a very backwards moving comic book, if you think about it, Superman. In some ways, it was progressive, and in some ways, it was very, very stuck.
Yeah. At one point, they got married in the 90s.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then he died in her arms, which was the worst comic ever. Speaking of comics, exciting news for your Gwenpool fans out there. Everybody thought Gwenpool was done for. She finished her run, but it was just announced that Gwenpool is coming back in August with her friends, America, Hawkeye, and Generation X, because they're rebooting West Coast Avengers. So what's interesting is they're rebooting West Coast Avengers, which was around. It was an old comic.
Mm-hmm. The original Human Torch, not Johnny Storm,
is in the West Coast Avengers. These were all books that were recently canceled, but were fan favorites. It's very exciting that they're coming back, and it's sort of, they're kind of like a D team. I love it. I love a scrappy team.
I'm waiting until Gwenpool is broken up into volumes so I can buy it and read it.
There's volumes.
There is?
Yeah, there.
Okay.
There's five. She didn't have a long run.
Okay, because I know nothing of Gwenpool, and you and Kat from Comic Trips have really put the comic book over.
Gwenpool is a lot like the run of Animal Man, if you ever read the original Animal Man. It's very, very meta, even more meta than Deadpool, because in Deadpool, you know, he's constantly making references to the fact he is a comic book. Whereas in Gwenpool, she was a regular person in our world who was a fan of comics and got, like, sucked into the Marvel world. So her superpower, which she didn't really have any powers, but her superpower was she knew continuity. So she would be able to go up to somebody and say something about their past, or go up to somebody and, like, there's a really interesting scene where she's with Thor, the new Thor that's a female, who was Jean from the original Thor comics. And she's fighting Thor, and she's like, I have to do something to distract her. So she goes, well, what if I say her real name? Shit, what's her name? Natalie Portman played her. Like, she says that, and okay, then she remembers like Jane, and then she's like, what did you say? And so that's her power, knowing continuity.
That's great. That's so, a good power to have.
Yeah, so, and then when she was getting canceled, they did something really clever, where she realizes that she either can become a bad guy and be interesting, or she could stay a good guy but be uninteresting and get canceled. So she sort of gets canceled. It was this amazing meta thing, because they were like, we're canceling the line, and then they were like, they wrote that into it. It was really interesting.
And now she's back.
Now she's back with the West Coast Avengers.
No character ever stays gone.
No, especially a fan favorite like that. But
I gotta check it out.
Yeah.
Because I always would get her confused with Spider-Gwen.
Which a lot of people do. Spider-Gwen is Gwen Stacy.
See, I just thought it was just this one Gwen and was just going back and forth.
Like, I mean, what's weird about Gwenpool is it's inspired by Spider-Gwen, because when Spider-Gwen happened, they did this just for funsies. They did this thing where they did Gwen version of every character. So for a Deadpool comic, they did Gwenpool. You know, it was just one image, but it was so such a cool costume that people started cosplaying it immediately. And they were like, well, let's turn this into a book. But we already have a book with Gwen Stacy. So they just created this character, Gwen Poole. Her last name is Poole. And that's why when she comes into the Marvel Universe, she's got a Deadpool-esque costume. Because that's the way the universe translated her. It's really interesting.
When do we get Gwen Poole in a Deadpool?
In a movie, you mean?
Yeah.
I would love for it to happen. I don't know. You know, when I was watching Deadpool 2, there was a little part in the back of my head that was like, wouldn't it be so cool if she was just like in a post-credit scene? So much crazy shit happened in that movie. But alas, maybe if there's a Deadpool 3, they'll just throw in a Gwenpool. Oh boy. I'm just looking at the next story and I'm having feelings. I'm worried about how you are going to react to this. Because, all right, let's talk about Thundercats Roar. Thundercats Roar was announced, and there was a sort of preview trailer put out that had the opening of it. And the interwebs, Emilio's shaking his head, the interwebs went crazy with negativity. All the neckbeards and the butthurts and the adult virgins were crying about their childhoods being ruined, and they got all sorts of crumbs in their neckbeards. And I have to say, I like the way it looks.
No. No.
Why?
No. It looks like shit.
Why does it look like shit?
It's too campy. I don't want Teen Titans. I don't want Adventure Time.
Why not?
I don't want a Ben 10.
But why not?
Because here's the deal. And I think you guys know me when you listen to this program. I'm real easygoing when it comes to my media, my pop culture. And if reboots happen, they happen. And there's nothing right. to do about it. So I'm just going to let it be. But this, it was never a light cartoon
right.
to begin with.
So why isn't it that a brilliant direction to take it?
Because it's not.
It wasn't, and now it's going to be.
I don't think so, though. I don't think it's going to be funny.
But why not make it different?
Because the animation is stupid. I get it.
So that's what I'm saying.
Make something new.
Nothing.
Create something new.
No, I don't think so. I don't agree with that because we have tons and tons of reboots.
All right, did you? I watched some of it. I don't like it.
That's fine.
Hi, I'm Lion-O, and I'm holding my thunder stick or whatever. What did he call it? The switchblade of doom?
I don't remember.
What? Motherfucker,
it's
that's
a
the
comedy.
Motherfucker, that's the Sword of Omens. That's sight beyond sight.
But
Jaga gave that to you.
But nothing is happening to the original episodes. Nothing is happening to the original series. It remains.
I get that. You can watch it.
Now, this is just
But I'm a traditionalist when it comes to that animation, because let me tell you something. That animation looked great.
And it still does, my friend.
It does. It stands
Now we're taking this silly idea and we're saying, let's make it in a funny way. Let's make it a million different ways.
I don't.
Because guess what?
What?
In 2011, they rebooted it,
and
nobody gave a fuck.
They
did it the exact same way. They made it a little bit more anime. They made it a little bit grittier. But there was your serious Thundercats, and nobody cared. This time around, they're going, okay, let's try comedy. What's wrong with that?
All right, so comedy aside, you could shoehorn in a couple of jokes. Fine.
No, it's going to be straight up.
But I understand.
A comedy
show. But that's the thing, though. Like, you
could
really make Mumra. You're going to make him like a fucking butt of the joke?
Yeah.
Come on. You can't do that.
Sure you can.
Ancient spirits of evil.
Why is he
Transform
dead?
This decayed form to Mumra, the ever living. That's a scary motherfucker. I don't want to look at Mumra and laugh. I had the toys. I was fucking petrified of Mumra.
You could still be petrified of him.
Nah, B. You can't because I'm going to look at him and be like, this is a campy motherfucker now. You can't take the ever-living as a joke.
Why not?
Because he's supposed to be a badass.
I don't know if anything's supposed to be anything.
You don't think so? So the original Mumra wasn't a badass?
No, he was.
Yeah. So this Mumra should be a badass.
Why?
Why are you
That would
make-
be the same thing. Why do the same thing?
Because there needs to be one straight man. I don't think they're going to make Mumra the straight man.
No, I don't think there'll be any. I don't know if there'll be any straight man. It's going to be a cartoon. Look, people
Comedy needs a straight man.
Well, it's been like that for years.
I don't know if there's Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah.
It's the formula. Even we do it on this show.
But so your main problem is Mumra. That's your main problem?
Listen, outside of...
Because we don't know how Mumra's going to be.
You saw him in the intro. He's reading a newspaper.
Well, he wants to be informed. Why can't Mumro know what's going on?
He has the little pool and the ancient spirits of evil to tell him shit's going down. A plane crashed in your neighborhood. They're taking over your block, B.
Think about this. These are ideas, right? These are intellectual property, to use the legal term. To use the more artistic term, they're just concepts. They're just mythology. They're ideas. You and I grew up with them. You know, we grew up with all of this shit. He-Man, which we've talked a lot about. Voltron, which we've talked a lot about. Thundercats. She-Ra's coming back, I think, in a very similar way to Thundercats, okay? Our childhood is done.
I'm not saying my childhood is ruined.
I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm not putting the words in your mouth. But what I'm saying is, what's the problem with doing something different?
Because it don't look good. Aesthetically pleasing to me. I don't like
you don't
the way
like
it looks.
That Steven Universe
no,
style?
I think it's dumb. It doesn't fit that schematic. It fits Steven Universe. It fits Adventure Time. It fits Teen Titans Go. It doesn't fit shows like Thundercats or even Ben 10. It doesn't look good, and it shouldn't be that. It's lazy animation.
It's not lazy.
I think it's lazy animation.
It's different. It's different, it's but I don't think it's lazy. Just because it has a light touch doesn't mean it's lazy. It's going for a more sort of comedic thing.
You could make Lion-O jacked. Instead, you make him frumpy.
Well, he's not frumpy. He's just fit into that aesthetic.
That little fucking cat thing.
See, I love designs. One of my favorite things is when you see...
You're going to tell me that's a great design?
Yeah, it is a great design.
Nah. See, here's what I like.
Well,
do
you walk into MoMA and go, oh, this is not good because it's not, you know, Renaissance paintings? It's different.
Andy Warhol is overrated.
Okay. All right, fine.
Like, wow, I just think he's getting at consumerism. Wow, yeah. Great. Anybody can paint the fucking Campbell's soup can pink.
But he did.
Yeah.
He fucking
did. Because he did it first.
Exactly.
And then all these copycats came and was like, well, I'm going to change this up.
But the idea is that there are images everywhere. You live in a world of images. Why not take these images and show them to your new way?
But
there is a... There,
so
you know,
do it the way you did Voltron on Netflix.
You make a connection. You're actually right. To say Andy Warhol giving you a pink Campbell's soup can is similar to Thundercats Roar. It's saying, here's the thing that you know. Here's the thing that exists in your world.
I'm going to change
it. Here it is in a different way.
Which is fine. I'm all for that, because you give me Voltron on Netflix. I like the way it looks. It's drawn well. It's constructed well. It's written well. It's times when it's funny. It's times when it needs to be serious. But again, I get it. That's for an adult audience. Thundercats Roar is going to be for a child's audience. It doesn't take a fucking genius to go, okay, here's what's on Cartoon Network now.
Mm-hmm.
This is all the animations the same across the board. So you go from being Warhol with the pink Campbell's soup can.
Everything looked like Ren and Stimpy. I mean, they go through these phases, don't they?
Even then, I thought that was sloppy animation as well.
It's not sloppy. Just things are influenced by other things. They may not be big to you and I, but Gravity Falls and Steven Universe and Adventure Time are huge right now. And to take
see, but I like
that
Gravity
look.
Falls, though. I like the way Gravity Falls is drawn. I don't like how Steven Universe is drawn.
Do you ever look at, like, DeviantArt online, like, where you see, you know, a classic character you know, like Winnie the Pooh,
yeah,
but he's drawn in some weird way?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting to you? Looking at the Thundercats characters and seeing them in this weird, different way was, I don't know, I love that. That's
my man, I got a Lion-O bank right there. That's my Lion-O.
And that's the original Lion-O.
That's how I want it to look. And I don't want it to change.
I understand.
Because he's a badass. This is a fucking badass.
But can we make... But
that threw the sarcophagus into the ancient spirits of evil pool, ending Mumra on third
Well, the
Earth.
New one is going to be probably 15 minutes long and be jokes.
See, but that's the problem. If you're going to do something... I'm not saying it's got to look like Dragon Ball Z.
Mm.
It doesn't have to.
It's taking a total 180. It was a serious, muscle-bound 80s Reagan-era show. And this new one.
Well, I don't think Reaganomics had anything to do with Thundercats.
No, I think Reagan.
And the political infrastructure on Third Earth.
No, I think you could see a lot of that ideology in Thundercats. Lion-O is super Jesus-y. Rewatch the pilot, and it's weird.
Boy becomes man.
It's a weird
guided
pilot.
By a spirit.
But what I'm saying
is... Oh, fuck, you're making me think about this now.
No, think.
It's
a 180. It's a 180. And how unexpected is that? I mean, you don't like it, don't. Here's the thing. We've made this point before. All we've seen is the opening.
Yes.
All these videos online of people saying this is the worst thing that ever happened. This is like when we talked about the new live action Teen Titans, when people saw one little image and they saw that Starfire is black and they went, oh my God, no. Oh my God. Beast Boy has green hair instead of green skin. We don't know yet. I'm totally for the first episode comes out. People watch it. People review it. They say this fucking sucks. But I was on YouTube before and I put in Thundercats Roar to rewatch the preview and I saw so many of these neckbeardy bastards crying over it.
If it is amazing and it's a home run, then I will retract my statement.
Well, I don't know if it could be a home run for you, because I think the way I would define a home run is that they achieve what they're trying to do perfectly. And I think from the outset, you don't like what they're trying to do.
Well, because again, I think it's real lazy animation. It's like, okay, well, this works.
But that's a really amazing style, though.
This works, so we're going to copy this. It's amazing because if you're doing something like Steven Universe, which is supposed to be campy, sweet, and a little bit sometimes sad, it works.
Right.
But I think with Thundercats, it's a hard time making it work, because I think, you know, you're looking at the source material at the beginning. Where Steven Universe, you could say, wow, this animation is great because it's something new. And it's like, wow, okay, I've never seen this before. So this story is unraveling in front of my eyes and being told. We already know the ethos of Thundercats. But so now it's like, okay, you have this in 85. Lion-O, legitimately, I always said this, looked like Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Okay?
Now
he looks like Patton Oswalt.
No, now he looks like a silly cartoon. Now he looks, you look at him and you go, because guess what?
I don't like my Lion-O silly, beloved.
This is a series about talking cats. It's a silly idea. I mean, even if we take it seriously, that's fine, but
I get it. Everything should change and everything should evolve, but I like my Mel Gibson looking Lion-O.
Moving on to our last news story, and this is something I'm really happy about, and it's something that in the world of genre and fandom, I think is an amazing achievement. Every year, of course, are the Nebula Awards. Nebula Awards are the yearly recognition for the best works of science fiction and fantasy released in the United States. And the Nebula Awards has gone on for years, and Neil Gaiman has a million of them. And
we'll get one soon.
Yeah, we'll get one. You know, it goes to comic books, it goes to books, it goes to short stories, it goes to movies and TV. It's all pop culture. This year, the Ray Bradbury Award. Ray Bradbury, that's a big name. The Ray Bradbury Award for Outstanding Dramatic Presentation was awarded to Get Out.
Mm.
Jordan Peele's Get Out. I loved Get Out. I think Get Out is both amazing and important and just something I could watch a million times and find something new in. You know, it's not an award like an Oscar is or an award like an Emmy is, but in some ways it's an award with more prestige in terms of the intellectual community.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know Jordan Peele, I'm proud of him somehow. You know, from somebody who was on Mad TV, the worst comedy show ever, and then went to Key and Peele and just did it, you know, came out. When he was coming out with a horror movie, people were like, the comedian's coming out with a horror movie? And then he fucking rocked the world. I'm excited. I don't know. It's an exciting thing for genre. Do you want to mosey over to Trailer Corner?
Yeah, let's put our spurs on and go walk over there.
Speaking of Jordan Peele, did you see the trailer for Black Klansman?
I got a kick out of that one.
It's produced by Jordan Peele, but directed by Spike Lee. It looks good. What do you think?
Let me tell you something. Adam from Girls, man.
Adam Driver.
Really just kills it. Denzel Washington's son. I'm on board. I like the whole thing.
Yeah.
I like the beginning where he's doing the voice and he's talking and they assume he's a white dude.
Right.
And then they have Adam from Girls go in and pretend to be him. And
right. They're both playing the same guy.
Yeah. I think it's great.
I don't know if it's a true story or not, but you know, the main character is African American and he's like the first, this is the 70s or even earlier. And he's this African American cop and he wants to infiltrate the KKK, so he calls them up, and there's this really funny moment in the trailer where he's doing his white voice. Topher Grace, as David Duke, leader of the Ku Klux Klan, is like, yeah, I'm glad I'm talking to a real American. And the movie, just from the trailer, the movie looks like it's going to balance comedy and more serious stuff.
And I think it's good like that. And again, I think...
Which is something Lee's good at. Comedy is so important, I think, outside of just the genre of comedy. You know, when Get Out was nominated for a Golden Globe in the category of comedy, a lot of people were scratching their heads. Some people were even offended. But I think that that was too simple. I think the Hollywood Foreign Press, who nominates things for Golden Globes, they've always got their own weird way of looking at our cinema. And I don't think they were saying, oh, this isn't a serious movie. I think they were looking at the deep satire of it.
Mm-hmm.
Get Out is scary and it's poignant, but it's also funny. There is definite comedy in Get Out. I mean, I think comedy can be there. You could be laughing at the same time you're scared. And I think you could be laughing at the same time you're angry. So it looks like Spike Lee with Jordan Peele is achieving that balance, at least from the trailer.
I think it will lean more on comedy, but then get real serious at points.
Yeah, there's a serious point in the trailer where I guess Adam Driver's character is Jewish, and he's like, you know, this is more than just a job for me. Why are you acting like you don't have skin in the game? You should be just as mad at these people as I am. So by the way, I mean, we talk about him as Kylo Ren. He's a great actor.
He really is.
He's great.
We make the joke and say Adam from Girls constantly, but
he's an amazing actor.
He's very good.
He was really great in Logan Lucky. He's an amazing performer.
But also, you know, John David Washington that's Denzel's son. John David Washington is a great actor. I've watched him in, I don't know if you've ever seen it, Ballers.
Yeah, I watch Ballers. Ballers is like a little bit of a secret. It's a little bit of something I don't talk about, but I've watched every episode.
He's
cool.
Oh
shit,
man.
Yeah, he's fucking good. Main dude.
Yeah, he's Ricky.
How do you feel about the trailer for Happy Time Murders?
I don't know if I want my Muppets to be like Andrew Dice Clay.
And they say from the director of
Muppet Treasure Island.
Right. Yeah. But they're also not saying these are Muppets. Well, if you're not familiar with the trailer, go and watch it. It's a little bit like a Roger Rabbit situation where it's a real world, but there are puppets or Muppets in the real world, and it's dirty. There's a cum joke in the trailer that's really ridiculous.
Hooker's ecstasy.
Yeah.
Melissa McCartney doing drugs.
A hooker refers to her crotch as rotten cotton. Really gross. One of the taglines in the trailer is, "No Sesame, All Street." Sesame Street sued them and said, we don't want our name
associated with this filth.
Yeah. So this movie's playing a fine line of being like, hey, Muppets, but we can't say Muppets, but we're also kind of saying Muppets. I don't know. I think it would be braver if it really were the Muppets. If they were like, this is a new Muppets vehicle,
then
we're going for
it. Never doing that.
No, they're never going to do that.
No. Could you imagine that scene at the end of the trailer where Kermit's banging out Miss Piggy and then they're doing a...
And he just comes all over the wall.
They're doing a two-minute cum joke.
Ridiculous. Do you think that movie would be good, though? I wonder if it will be funny for 5 minutes and then you'd be like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I think that'll happen.
A little bit like Ted.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I get it. It's a teddy bear that curses. I got it.
Oh, these Muppets are filthy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like Wondershowzen. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember Wondershowzen.
Which I liked.
Yeah, that was good.
Wondershowzen was really good. Now, if they keep it in that vein and in that direction,
yeah,
I think it'll work.
You know what reminded me of? Crank Anchors. That horrible show.
I don't think it was that bad.
Well, it's time for Melissa McCarthy to do a good movie. Every sixth movie she makes is good, and then she does five terrible ones. So I think it's time again for a good Melissa McCarthy.
If we're playing Melissa McCarthy bingo, she's about ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, you want to take a breaky-poo?
Yeah, I want to calm down a little bit. I'm still a little riled up from Lion-O.
Okay. Relax. You relax a little bit.
Break and
go comb the crumbs out of your neck beard.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Guys, hashtag Mike's right.
Hashtag fuck Mike. Almost 52 episodes, ladies and gentlemen. When have I ever been outraged over anything?
How about Summer the Purple Penguin? A very similar.
Well, she can go fuck herself And you know it's wrong, and I know it's wrong, and it's just something to shoehorn in more merchandise so kids to buy little purple penguins.
We'll be right back. Want to hear something cute about me?
What?
When I was a little child, I couldn't say the word thunder, so I would say Thundercats. And I would say thunder, thunder, Thundercats. And my mother, oh, she enjoyed it. She found it very cute.
Well, this is no Thundercats, this new television
show. Actually, that's what they should call it.
The
Thundercats.
That's,
we're putting the fun back in Thundercats.
See, I would be happy if they did that.
Thundercats are on the move.
I would rather them do that, where it's a spoof on Thundercats and they call Thundercats.
Okay.
I would like that.
All right.
We are back.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hi. Pop Culture Man Children, what episode are we on? 1,000?
Yeah, 1,012.
God.
Emilio, tell the people where we are right now.
We're sitting in my bedroom. The bedroom I've been in since I'm a child.
But what is this we're doing right now?
Oh, we're podcasting.
No, it's not at all what I'm setting you up for.
Oh, I know what you're God, I know what you're setting me up for.
What am I setting you up for?
We're chilling.
The chill sesh.
No, but see, that's the...
We're in the chill sesh.
Do you understand what comedy is?
I understand what comedy is. Do you understand what comedy is, sir?
I was being the straight man. You were supposed to be the zany one, and then we were going to leave.
I'm the zany one?
Yeah. Yes.
I like how you not getting the setup is you being the straight man.
Yeah, get it?
Yeah, okay. I got it. Is anyone out there get it? You're a regular Bud Abbott. Because who's on first went like this. Hey, who's on first? And then Bud Abbott went, actually, who here is not the pronoun, but the name of the gentleman, and, you fucked up the whole joke the way you fucked up the joke before.
I didn't fuck up the joke. You just didn't understand my body language. To go with it. Normally, you read me very, very well.
I like this shirt, by the way. You look like Alec Baldwin from Beetlejuice.
That's what I was going for.
Is that what you were going for?
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Very good.
It's a Ralph Lauren denim supply company.
But it's black and white, like flannel.
Yeah.
Which looks exactly like he wears in that.
Yeah. I got to be fancy. I got to be a name brand whore sometimes.
I know how much labels mean to you.
They do. They mean a lot. The shoes are Saint Laurent. You don't even know
those
what Saint Laurent
is. But they're nice.
Thank you very much.
They have a real flair to them.
Thank you.
How much do they cost?
A lot of money.
My God.
A lot of money. One day we will talk about my addiction to clothes.
Yeah.
Because every time I open up my closet to go grab a pair of sneakers, you're here. You just shake your head in disgust.
To each their own, you know. We all have our own fandoms.
Yeah.
You're into...
haberdashery.
Yes, absolutely you are. So, since we're chilling in the chill sesh, let me just...
Yeah, fix yourself a little bit.
Let me get a nice chill.
Yeah. I'm sitting on my new chair, too.
Ah, yeah, what kind of chair is that?
This is a WWE Backlash 2018 chair.
Does it feel good? Does it feel warm?
I like it. I mean, it's been broken in. I've sat on it. I have two of them, so, because we went to the event, me and my brother.
And so one's for sitting on.
One's for rocking and one's for stocking.
Absolutely.
The rest of them are stocked over there, so I don't use those. So this is my sitting chair.
You know, we're here in the chill session. There was a new Marvel movie and there was a new Star Wars movie, and I swear to God,
we're not trying to be corporate shills for Disney.
I mean, like, we have to talk about them, right?
Disney owns the world.
I don't have too much to say about these pitchers.
You don't like them?
No, I like them a lot.
So shouldn't you have a lot to say?
No, because there's not a ton to say. We're talking about Deadpool 2 and Solo, A Star Wars Story. I like them both. I saw them both twice. Yeah, I had a fun time at the movies.
Well, I went to both of them yesterday.
You did a back-to-back?
Yeah. Holy I paid shit. For one and snuck into the other.
Oh, you're a fucking devious criminal.
I was feeling a little loose.
What theater were you in?
United Artist.
Nice. Yeah. They don't give a shit what goes on.
They don't give a fuck over there.
Which one did you see first?
I saw Deadpool first.
What did you think of Deadpool 2?
I loved it. I actually had notes.
I love it.
And this is what I wrote. Ready? Smaller story.
Disagree.
Concentrated with more characters.
Mm-hmm.
Brolin as Cable, better than Brolin as Thanos.
Yeah, absolutely. When I first saw Infinity War, I really was dazzled by its attractions. But the farther out I get from it, the more I have just a sort of banal nothingness feeling for it. Like a big meh.
Well, he said on Merrin's podcast, most of the time he was playing the role of Thanos, he was talking to himself.
Yeah, he kind of was a little bit candid on Merrin's podcast.
He was very good on Merrin's podcast.
He seemed to...
Marcus Welby.
Yeah, they kept making the joke about his father playing Marcus Welby. He seemed to say that he's not that into the superhero movies as much as he can say that for a guy who just had two giant superhero movies come out.
Yeah.
He seemed more into Deadpool 2, which makes sense because it's a much better movie.
He said it's a more physically demanding role.
Because he's in it. He's actually acting in it, yeah. And he's doing comedy, and he's great in it.
He was fantastic. My notes continue on with, fixing the X-Men timeline was well done.
Do you think of that as real, though? I don't know if I think of the stuff that happened post-credits as, like, real or if it's just, like, funny jokes.
I think it's funny jokes. I'm not saying it's real, but you can tell, like, hey, we're going to, quote-unquote, bunny ears fix this now.
Yeah. Well, what I always liked about the X-Men movies is, unlike the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they don't seem beholden on making everything make sense. You know, there's different versions of characters. There's timelines that don't match up. It's just sort of like, it's more like the comics in the sense where it's like, yeah, some continuity works, some continuity doesn't work. Yeah, this is a different Deadpool. Who cares?
Now, you said something in the beginning when I wrote smaller story. You said, I disagree.
Yeah, I think what I like better about the first movie it is it's a tiny little story. And I think this one, it's doing a lot. It's a little bit bloated, which is always true for superhero sequels. You've got the story with Vanessa, which is my only real problem with the movie. You've got the story with Russell. And then you've got the X-Force, which as much as I love all that shit, is not necessary. If you found another way to just put Domino in, we should say spoiler alerts for these movies. If you found another way to just put Domino in without the whole X-Force thing, it would be a much tighter movie.
Yeah, but I think they did the X-Force stuff just for comedy, just because of the way it unfolded.
Right, it's a huge setup.
For
and
nothing.
Then they all die.
And which is hysterical.
Right. And then you have Domino.
And then you
great.
Have Domino, who I love her.
She's great on Atlanta. She's a really amazing actress.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's great. It's odd to have Deadpool, who is, especially in the movie, makes it very known. I don't play well with others. I'm not working with others. Don't worry about it. This is a franchise that's not going to get a spinoff. And then all of a sudden, we get team-ups. Now, do they do it on purpose? I think so. Yeah.
When he's dressed like an X-Men, he's like, X-Men, coming through! X-Men, we're an outdated metaphor for racism in the 60s.
I think it works well because he's setting up the fact like, hey, we're probably going to make an X-Force movie.
Oh, they're definitely going to make an X-Force movie.
So just enjoy now because now you're going to get me to do spinoff.
Yeah, but all we have is him and Domino. All the other others died.
Well, you have Colossus.
Yeah, that's true.
And Cable.
Yeah, that's true. Cable's a good guy.
And Russell.
Is Russell going
to
be
I think Russell has to be in it. And I think Pete.
Peter did live. He did go back and save Peter.
So I think you'll see Peter come back again.
Peter was great. What about the Vanisher?
Let me tell you something.
The Vanisher was really... Every time you saw his parachute...
Harness.
I literally laughed every single time.
Because you didn't know what it was doing.
Because it was just like... He was just like, Vanisher, I'm glad that you're here. And then you just see the fucking backpack. It killed me.
Okay.
It was really good.
So the theater was packed. It was a quick cut. And everybody yelled out at the same time, oh my God, that was Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me, I thought it was Brad Pitt, and then I had to look it up. I was like, no, can it be? Was it? No. But it was.
it was like, wait, what? Wow. Yeah. Wow, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the first post-credit scene, Yukio and Megasonic Teenage Warhead, they fix the time slider, and Wade goes back and saves Vanessa. Is that canon? Because if it is, doesn't that kill all the drama of this movie?
Kills everything.
It kills
that,
whole last... Because yeah. I really... That last scene where they're like in heaven and you hear the acoustic version of Aha's Take on Me... I actually was like feeling feels at that moment. But if he just goes back and brings her back to life.
The stuff with Vanessa was really good.
I liked all that stuff. I liked, let me put it this way. I liked the scenes in so-called heaven. I liked that she was guiding him. But in terms of the story, I kind of feel like, come on, let's give her something to do.
And when do
let's turn her into Copycat already. Let's let her be a hero.
Is that who they're going to do?
Well, that's what she does eventually in the comics. She becomes a superhero. But I feel like she wasn't in the first movie.
Let's pull the trigger and just reveal Vanessa as Lady Death.
Well, let's do something with her.
You'll get there.
I feel like in this movie, they did what they call fridging, which is like the idea of when you fridge a character, the female characters in comic books, they're basically just body parts in a fridge to make the male character angry. And I feel like you've got a great actress. You know, why not let her do stuff in it? I just felt like her dying in the beginning was just like, it was I'm sick of seeing females die or be abused as a way of making the male character move. You know, it goes back to like the Death Wish thing. Like, that bothers me, you know what I mean? And I'm also bothered because you've got a great actress there and you're going to give her nothing to do?
Everything intersected to Vanessa, so... Him saving Russell was because of Vanessa. Him joining the X-Men was because of Vanessa. Him sacrificing himself and wanting to die was for Vanessa.
I mean, that's the thread that keeps it all together. But in terms of plot, the movie really starts with Russell when he's an X-Man. So it's like, that's where it feels to me overlong.
It's the setup for that.
Well, it's a setup for him being depressed and then joining the X-Men as a trainee.
Yes. All the stuff in the house was hysterical. He's talking about...
Oh, the cameo of the X-Men, the real X-Men, was great.
And no, but he didn't even pay attention. And you just saw the Beast shut the door really quick.
Why are you the only two people here? I like what he said. I can't be an X-Men. I'm not even a virgin.
We got so much money now. They can't do this. Shut the door.
Yeah. What'd you think of Juggernaut? Emilio is turning to his Juggernaut notes, flipping the page.
Juggernaut returns. Poole tries to reason with him and tears Poole in half. That's a nice reference, if it's a reference, to Hulk versus Wolverine, which leads to a Star Wars joke when Luke is in the swamp with Yoda.
Yeah, yeah. Juggernaut's a completely CG character, and he's voiced by Ryan Reynolds. I love that he acts like a fanboy to Juggernaut. He's not treating Juggernaut like a real character, but he's treating Juggernaut like, oh my god, it's the character Juggernaut. He even says to Colossus, he's my favorite Marvel character. And never he's meet your heroes.
And he's listing.
Yeah, he's listing comic the comics that he's in. I always wanted to see you run at me with murderous intent in your eyes. When he rips him in half, it's brutal. What do you think about that death scene? Say fuck. Just say fuck once. Fuck. Whoa. Ooh. Enjoy hell, potty mouth.
Want to build a snowman? Kid Russell was fantastic.
Oh, that kid was great. He was funny. He makes friends with Juggernaut, and he's like, we're boys now.
We're like Tupac and Biggie Smalls.
He was great, that kid.
He has to come back.
His prison pocket.
Yeah.
I could hear you rummaging around in there.
He has a butt pen.
Oh, my favorite is when he kept saying lazy writing. He tries to take the collar off of Wade, and Domino goes, try 7. And he's like, it's not going to be a one-number code. And he do 7, and it comes off, and he goes, lazy writing.
Well, if you think about it, too, the religious iconography within the number 7 is the calling card of Jesus.
I don't know anything about Jesus.
777 is supposed to be the number for Jesus Christ. Like, the devil is 666. Well, and for Jesus it's 777.
I did not know that at all.
Yeah. So, when you go into that school,
yeah,
that school is religious based.
Yeah,
even
yeah, yeah.
Even the, I guess, whatever they said, the world shall be fixed by the stroke of my hand or whatever.
Yeah, he was definitely a religious freak, the villain there.
That's why I think the code is 7.
That's a really interesting point. That's something I never get. Did you also notice that when he looked like he had been burnt It seemed like they were trying to make a reference to the gray Deadpool suit.
Yes.
Because it looked just like the gray Deadpool
exactly.
suit.
Here's something I started to think about, and he even made the reference about DC characters being dark and brooding.
Yeah.
I thought of it this way. Marvel characters are regular humans who didn't want what they got. Their ability-wise, their powers, whatever. And we see them grow and we see them develop. There's a human side to a Marvel story, which is in stark contrast to DC, which is more aliens and gods and creatures coming to Earth.
Yeah, that's a really good point. To compare the movies, you can't help but compare just Marvel versus DC, which is something fanboys have been doing for a million years. And Marvel's always had better character-driven writing. DC has more iconic characters. The thing Stan Lee did that was revolutionary was he made them people with problems. Spider-Man is a teenager, so he's got to deal with teenager stuff on top of being a superhero. Tony Stark is a genius, but he's flawed and he's an alcoholic.
Deadpool's a sociopath with multiple personality disorder.
Right. The Hulk is a victim of abuse. Yeah. I don't know. I think there's hope for DC in terms of their movies.
The only thing that I find different with Marvel is Marvel needs to stop doing the prototypical, they get their powers, and then it's like we see that story where it's like, oh, they're going to struggle with them, they don't want them, then they realize they get them, and then they do extraordinary things with them.
I hate to say this, but I'm kind of feeling fatigued from both Marvel and Star Wars.
There's a lot going on.
There's too much.
Well, now we're going to get Ant-Man and Wasp.
Give us a break.
You're never going to get a break.
Can we take a year off from these properties?
You could.
Star Wars more than Marvel, I think, because Star Wars, they're not allowing themselves to do different things, so they're so similar, these Star Wars movies. I mean, I loved Solo, and in some ways, Solo is just pure fun. One of the reviewers said that it actually seems to have more DNA in common with the original Star Wars than maybe any of the other sequels, and I agree with that in a sense where, just like the original Star Wars, it's just a big fun ride. At the same time, it's still Star Wars-y, and it has Star Wars-y music, and it has Star Wars-y look about it.
You don't fix what ain't broke.
But I think they're breaking it, because I think we're getting super, super sick of it.
Now, I don't know this franchise like you. I mean, I sat in and watched Solo yesterday, and I still don't know what the fuck is going on. Oh, I did know, oh shit, that's Darth Maul.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah.
As far as, like, all these other... like, what was going on? And
did you really not know? Because I was thinking to myself when I watched Solo, this is a kind of, this would be a good first movie.
I got it in 10 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, it's just the story of this guy.
I got it, but I don't know the backstory like
right,
you
right.
do, so you probably knew these characters already?
Well, other than Han Solo, Chewbacca, and Lando, all those other characters are new.
Oh, that's all brand new.
Yeah, and I think they were really good. That's when I realized when I was watching it, I actually really liked this movie.
Because they were new characters.
Because I was caring about the new characters. Okay. I was like, wow, Woody Harrelson's character is actually really cool.
Very good.
And great performance.
That's a good actor.
Emilia Clarke's character, I found myself really liking them and shipping them. Even though I know that, you know, he ends up with Princess Leia.
Well, listen, here's the deal. And I think to answer your question, the only reason why I don't think we have burnout is because you still have Fox has Marvel properties, Disney has Marvel properties, and Sony has Marvel properties. So now it's like, okay, they're all not under the Marvel Cinematic Universe aesthetic. Okay, so we're going to get a dark comedy that really breaks the fourth wall with Deadpool. And then you're going to get Ant-Man and Wasp, which is in the Marvel Universe. And now we're going to get Venom, which is different from both. Where it comes to Star Wars, it's still all Disney. It's all Disney. So you're still
yeah.
getting the same tone, the same texture. It's like dating the same person for years. You know what touch will turn them on. You know what thing to say to annoy them. You know what thing to say to make them swoon over you. So it's like you know your significant other. You know what works. You know what doesn't work.
It's not even just the fact that we've got Marvel coming from two studios. I think even just in the Disney Marvel stuff, you know, Iron Man is very different from Thor, who's very different from Ant-Man. You know, all these Star Wars movies, I wish they would just say, here's a totally different story with a totally different vibe inside the world of Star Wars. But they haven't yet had the balls to do that.
No. No.
Oh, man. Are we done with this? Can we move on to other things?
Yeah, sure.
you recommended to me the film Kodachrome, which was released on Netflix. And I really liked it. What did you think of it?
Well, I recommended it to you, so I wanted you to see it. So as I was coming to and from work for the last couple of weeks, I kept on seeing the Subway advertisements
for Kodachrome.
I'm like, what is this?
Right. I didn't know what it was either.
What's going on? Like, you know what I mean? Scarlet Witch is in it. Jason Sudeikis was in this, and one of my favorites,
Cliff Clavin's nephew,
Ed Harris, is in this. No, it wasn't Cliff Clavin. No, it was Norm.
Oh, he's Norm's nephew.
Yeah, Norm.
God, excuse me. I'm sorry. Can I tell you something? Ed Harris is one of those people that scares me.
Why?
I would never want to meet him in real life. He's like Tommy Lee Jones. Like, if I saw Ed Harris, I would cower away from him. He's just got an energy that scares me. Isn't he scary? He's scary to me.
I thought he was great in it.
He was great in it as a mean old bastard.
I looked at myself and I go, that's a good character.
No, he was great in it, but he scares the fuck out of me. Like, think about his character in the movie History of Violence. He's scary in that, too.
Hey, it's called acting.
Yeah, but he's always scary. He scares me.
But then there was this, you felt sad for
him. I'm scared of him.
Yeah, but you didn't feel sorry for him?
In some moments.
Where he was really reaching out to his son, you could tell he was emotional.
But he also fucked it up.
Well, he was a complete fuck-up because he was emotionally stunted.
Well, you know what? Can you give me a little summary for it for our listeners?
All right, so here's what you got. You got this music executive, played by Jason Sudeikis, who, I don't know, was kind of in and out of touch with the music, wanted to make good music, but the culture of the music industry dictates you got to make bullshit.
Yeah, his job's kind of on the line.
Scarlet Witch comes into his office and says, your dad's sick.
What's her real name?
I don't know. Something, Scarlet Witch.
Olsen.
Doesn't matter. Scarlet Witch comes into the office. Your dad's sick. He's dying. Wants to do a road trip with you. Wants to develop these...
Elizabeth Olsen.
Whatever. Scarlet Witch says, listen, we got these rolls of film your father wants to develop, and the only place that does it is dear fuck Kansas City.
Because they're Kodachrome.
Yes.
And this part is actually based on something true.
It's a story. It's based on a short story.
Yeah. It was based on a news story. It was this sort of human interest piece about how there was really just one place left that was developing Kodachrome.
Yeah.
Kodachrome film. So it begins that way, and I got to say, for the first 20, 30 minutes, I liked the performances, but I was like, I see where this is all going. The son and the father have... you know, the son hates the father because the father wasn't around.
Oh, it's been done before.
I was in the beginning, I was like, this is good, but kind of trite. But then I think it takes some turns that I wasn't totally expecting.
Where did it hook you? Because I could tell you where it hooked me.
They take a detour to go see Jason Sudeikis' uncle.
Who raised him. From 13 on.
Yeah. And that's when it starts to do things that I thought were interesting and different.
Because Ed Harris says that before the... uncle married the wife, they were fucking around, but he really couldn't get it up because he was drunk or whatever, and blah, blah, blah.
But that whole breakfast scene where he fucking shits all over the whole family, that was all in reaction to that he fell down and his son saw him weak and he wanted to lash out.
How good was that? To show you, like, all right, I'm still strong and I could still fuck with you.
He's so, you know, you've seen mean old men, but he's so destructive and vindictive that you could see him trying to hurt people. And it really was, it's so uncomfortable, those scenes.
Well, then he did the same thing when he pissed himself.
Yeah.
And the son stuck up for him with the band. But also at the same
time. But that's a great scene, that whole scene.
Well, he was the one that gave his son the balls to speak up against the band. He's like, listen, I've been around musicians. I've been around celebrities. I've been around artists.
Right.
If you kiss their ass and tell them their art's good, they're not going to respect you.
Right, because like we said, Sudeikis' job is on the line, so he's got to sign this band for his record label, and that sort of will get him in good with the company again. And he's got this meeting where he's pitching them, and at first he's sort of kissing their ass and it's not working, and then he goes with his father's advice and says, you know what, your first album's great, but your second album is shit. And I could get you back on track. And they're buying it. He had them. But then the father, because he's dying, pisses himself. And they don't realize that that's his father. And they start making fun of him. And Sudeikis gets mad and basically walks out on them. But then the father...
in the hotel.
Yeah. Doesn't give him the respect
for it.
The father's like, oh, you ruined it. Why'd you do that?
Yeah. And then Scarlet Witch yells at him, goes to the bar, eats hot wings, drinks beer,
yeah,
serenades each other with Live, which is a great band.
Yeah.
Did you get the music?
The angel opens their eyes.
Also, you listened to Live when you were a kid. Eyes.
Yeah, I was around in the 90s.
I'm just making sure, because I don't know if you listened to Live back then. You didn't look like a grunge kid.
I was around. I was around in the 90s. I watched a lot of Beavis and Butthead, you know?
Right.
And they watched grunge. All
right.
Yeah, she ends up quitting on the father. When the father says he fucked it up, she's like, well, he was defending you. And he's like, are you done? All right, you're fired. And then she leaves. See, before that, their relationship annoyed me because I kept thinking in the first act, why is she defending him? Like, I hate movies where someone's an asshole.
She knew the plot. She knew what was on the film. She knew why they wanted to develop it. And she thought that if they went on the trip, she could kind of be...
Did she?
She could kind of be his conscience.
I don't think she knew what was on
the
film.
She was his Jiminy Cricket. I think she did.
Because spoiler alert, what's on the film is pictures of Sudeikis as a child.
And his mother.
So So it shows that he actually...
Loved his wife and
he actually cared about that time of his life.
Yeah. She was his Jiminy Cricket, and the lawyer knew exactly what was going on. It was a well-orchestrated plan. And then at the end, the last setup for what they wanted to present and they wanted to highlight and his last big, like, hurrah in the photography world was going to be the work on Kodachrome of his wife and his kid.
Yeah.
Because he was going to curate that. And he had specific instructions that the son...
But you saw that coming, right? You knew what was going to be on the film. Everyone knew what was going to be on the film.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, whenever there's a Netflix release, I think...
Gets a little
predictable. Why is this a Netflix release and not a wide release? I know that I shouldn't think that way, but you can't help but think that way. Until one of these Netflix movies gets nominated for an Oscar and that changes the game...
It could.
Definitely.
Well, not Kodachrome, but it could.
Right. A movie can. It will happen. It will happen. But until that happens, you know, I can't help but think of straight-to-Netflix releases as, you know, what about this didn't get a wide release? And I think it's because we've kind of seen the story before. It was good, the performances were good, and it did some interesting things. You know what I thought they were going to do? I thought that the father was going to be in love with
the nurse. I thought that
Elizabeth Olsen, and they would have been like, they both were in love with
her. Well, I thought that at first because when she pushes Sudeikis away when he tries to make a move in his childhood bedroom, and then she goes and she's on her knees and she picks up Ed Harris and she's caressing his face and saying, it's okay.
Yeah, very intimate.
I thought she was gonna, like, you know, give him a little kiss.
Yeah, that would have made things even more complicated.
Yeah,
but they didn't go that way.
No. And then the best scene is the scene in the car afterwards.
Right, where where he's just being a dick to them.
Yeah.
And he's explaining why they're both broken people so they'd be good for each other.
And they're talking about happiness. And Sudeikis goes, you have a happy. He goes, let me tell you something about happiness, kid. It sucks. Creative types are supposed to be miserable.
If it weren't for Ed Harris, I think...
It would have never worked.
Yeah, because I think the character, we've seen the character before, and the dialogue is a little bit dialogue-y. You know what I mean? So, but Harris, I think, makes it fly, makes it work.
It was good.
It was good.
I'll give it 3 Mike Buongiornos out of 5.
I'm going to give it, I guess I'll give it 3.
3 Mike Buongiornos?
Yeah, I'll give it 3 Mike Buongiornos.
3 Mike Buongiornos a piece for a movie on Netflix isn't bad.
So go and watch it, PCMC fans, so you can play along with us. It's not all going to be...
Sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, it's not all going to be Wookiees.
No.
And Captain Marvel's. Very good. Very good. All right, let's take a break. And we are back. Welcome back to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. This is a full episode. Next week, there'll be a mini episode because that's how we roll. You can contact Emilio Sparks at Emilio Sparks on Twitter. You can follow the show on Instagram, Pop Culture Man Children, just like that. We're also available everywhere that you could find podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. It has taken maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
To teach Mike Buongiorno, or to even just get Mike Buongiorno to reset the table every time we come back from break.
I'm a radio professional.
this is a proud moment. It's like watching the baby bird fly away from the nest because he does it so effortlessly now.
It's like what Malcolm Gladwell said, you know, 10,000 hours. We've podcasted enough that I know how to fucking say the name of the show.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I'm glad to.
We used to fight about this constantly.
I'm glad I make you proud.
Why? Why do we got to do that for? It's a podcast. People listen. No, it's all about routine. It's routine. You have to let them know what they're listening to. How can they follow us? You got to beat it into their head.
You know what you're listening to, don't you, folks? I mean, you downloaded it.
Yeah. But maybe they're not following us.
Well, that's why we say. Yeah. That's why we give them the info.
Yeah, that's why it's important to give information.
Absolutely.
This is the final segment where we talk about what we're obsessed with.
You're going to think that my obsession is...
awful?
No, you're going to think that I'm saying it on purpose to needle you, but it's not.
If you say the new Thundercats, I'm
going to
kick
you in the
teeth.
No, it's not the new Thundercats, right. But it's related to that, which
is... of course it is.
My current obsession is Teen Titans Go. I saw the trailer for Teen Titans Go to the movies,
uh-huh.
And I thought, and I knew nothing about Teen Titans. I really didn't. I even said like a couple episodes ago that I know nothing about it. So I watched that trailer, and I thought it was really funny, and I really liked the animation. And then I saw that the entire series was on Hulu, and I've been watching it, and I'm loving it. It's really funny. It's really cute. I love all the characters. I love that version of Robin. It's like hilarious. There's
see,
like,
that works.
Adult jokes in it. Yeah, it works really well. But you know what? Fans of the Teen Titans show from 2003, the earlier Teen Titans show, which was a little bit more serious anime style, they hate Teen Titans Go. And me going into Teen Titans Go first, I love it. You know, there was a really interesting article I read recently on io9, and it was from this guy. I forget his name, but you can look it up. It's basically about how his daughter got him to think differently about fandom. And it was because his daughter loves Teen Titans, and then Teen Titans Go. And then she started reading the comic books, and the comic books are so different.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started liking all these different versions of the Teen Titan characters. And he was saying that when we were kids, you know, these things were precious. Nobody cared about comic books. You could get beat up for liking comic books. Yes. It wasn't cool like it is now. And so you had your three Star Wars movies, and they were precious. And you had your Marvel comics, and those were precious. And you protected them. You protected them. But now there's so much, and now that it's a big part of the world, his daughter, she doesn't get all upset that in this version Starfire is funny, and in that version Starfire is serious. So this is, I think, kind of like what we were arguing about in the first segment with Thundercats, this idea of... well, it could be, you know, it could be different things. I never watched the original Teen Titans, so I don't have any feelings about it. But I know Robin as a character. And I know Cyborg as a character from various other, you know, he's in Justice League too.
Yeah.
I like it. I like that I could turn on Teen Titans Go and I could see a comedy version. And I don't have to worry about the canon. You know what I mean? I don't have to worry that Robin has a Robin sort of batarang that talks and says redonkulous and it's just nothing but jokes.
Okay.
I've been binging them, and I even went to Toys R Us, rest in peace, because they're down to really good sales now. They're like 50% off, and I got a bunch of Teen Titan toys.
Oh, man.
When I say it's a current obsession, it's literally obsession. Like, I'm going to go home and probably watch 3 or 4 more episodes. I've been doing nothing since – you know I'm a professor, right?
Last time you told me.
Yeah, man. Since the semester ended – instead of grading or doing anything I'm supposed to do, I've literally just been sitting down and watching Teen Titans Go,
and
I'm just super into it.
Good.
I'm loving it. I'm just a huge fan of it.
Do they do anything superhero-y?
It's sort of like what their sitcom life is like between superhero acts, but they do superhero-y things. You do see them get into fights and stuff. Their main enemy is the Hive, which is other teenage villains. But it's really, the plots have nothing to do with supervillains. It's always about like just their lives. And my favorite one is Starfire. She's an alien from another planet, and she's overly happy, and she's got pink hair and orange skin. She says "the" wrong. Like, she'll be like, "It's time for the dinner." And she's got a weird alien named Silky that's her pet. I love it. I'm sorry. I know I'm a grown man. I'm eating this stuff up. Like, you know, like when you binge and you really binge, it's just on now. Mm-hmm. I've gone through the first season in maybe a day and a half, and I'm just excited to just fucking binge. By the next episode, I'm going to be wearing a fucking Starfire t-shirt, and I'm going to be fucking giving you a boring lecture about the importance of Starfire. And I love that. Isn't that part of the fun of fandom? When you find something new that's out there, that you knew was out there, but you didn't taste it yet. And then you taste it, and you're like, oh, I love this. And then you eat it up, and you become, you know, an expert overnight in it, because, you know, part of being a fandom is just voracious consumption. You're just like, oh, I'm going to eat it all. I just want it all. I want to know it all. I want to read every... After I'm done with this series, I know I'm going to go back and watch a 2003 more serious series. I'm going to go buy Teen Titan comics. It's a whole new avenue of obsession for me now.
Pal, I'm watching 1980s professional wrestling from Japan. So, yeah. But that's not the obsession.
Oh okay. No. What is the obsession?
I'm watching something way more adult than you. What you're watching.
As the fourth Doctor once said, what's the point of being an adult if you can't be childish sometimes? Doctor Who's another obsession of mine.
Oh, we know.
What is your obsession, sir?
Could you guess?
Well, let's see. You love MASH.
Mm-hmm.
You love Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
You've talked extensively about Bonanza.
Yes.
You love your old MeTV series.
Yeah. We'll see how well he knows his co-host and best friend.
Is it... Best friend's a strong word. Is it Gunsmoke?
Close.
Close?
Close.
Not Bonanza.
It stars somebody in Bonanza.
Is it Aftermath?
That's good, but no.
Is it Trapper John, MD?
No, it is Highway to Heaven, starring Michael Landon.
Michael Landon's in Bonanza?
He played Little Joe.
I know that he's in Little House on the Prairie.
Charles Ingalls.
Another one of your favorites.
Yeah.
So I've heard the name Highway to Heaven.
Yeah.
But I know literally nothing else about
so
it.
Let me set up this picture for you. This was a NBC program produced, written, directed by Michael Landon.
Oh, really? He was like, he was that guy.
Landon was everything, but Landon did it in Little House on the Prairie. And Landon,
I didn't know he was more than an actor.
And Landon did it for certain episodes of Bonanza. So at 22, he starts working on Bonanza. And he's really in the infancy of his career. Maybe my obsession is more Michael Landon.
Please, go on.
22, he gets the role of Little Joe Cartwright on Bonanza. Stays with it for all 14
seasons.
Now,
is that spelled L-I-L apostrophe? Lil Joe?
Lil Joe. Yeah, I think they do Lil Joe.
Lil Joe Cartwright.
Because I think they knew in 2018 the Littles would make a huge splash in hip-hop.
Yeah.
So you have Lil Joe Cartwright, and he's on for all 14 seasons. And he was...
I'm sorry, you say 14 seasons?
14 seasons of Bonanza.
Holy shit.
And he was the most popular character.
By the end, he was Big John, am I right? Hey.
Okay, so Bonanza started in 1959.
Holy Jesus.
It was still in black and white at this point.
Of course it was.
Ends in
I don't think we had color TV until the early 60s.
It ends in 73.
So it's 14
years. He goes and portrays Charles Ingalls on Little House in the Prairie from 74 to 83.
Okay, the year I was born.
Then he plays Jonathan Smith in Highway to Heaven from 84 to 89.
Jonathan Smith.
So Michael Landon consistently was with NBC for 30...
Oh, those were all NBC shows?
All NBC shows, 30 straight years. And before he died, he was going to do another series with NBC.
Well, tell me... Well, all right, but tell me what Highway to Heaven is about. Is it about a car that's got a ghost in it?
No. It's about an angel who was stripped of his wings, and now he's on probation, and he gets sent to Earth.
So it's a little like...
he's got to right the wrongs of humanity. So basically there's some...
Does he have to help
people.
George Bailey?
Essentially, yeah, there is a George Bailey-esque character by the name of Mark Gordon, who is played by Victor French, who was on Little House on the Prairie.
I mean, we all know Victor French is...
They were best friends.
Absolutely. So wait, was it like every episode he goes to a new town to help somebody, or is it like a more of a serialized thing?
Well, Jonathan is helping troubled people on Earth, and Jonathan and
Mark...
So
it's like a Hulk, but he doesn't Hulk out.
He doesn't Hulk out.
He's an angel.
He Jesus is out.
It's kind of like that show from the 90s, Touched by an Angel.
The Highway to Heaven is... the precursor to Touched by an Angel. They copied the whole premise.
Oh, wow. You've got strong feelings about Touched by an Angel.
I'm just saying. You know what I mean? So anyway, the boss, I think we know who the boss is in this thing.
God?
Yeah.
Who, is he played by George Burns?
No, they never.
Is there a voice?
No. God speaks to Jonathan.
Is this like super religious, or is it like just sort of vaguely religious?
No, it's vaguely religious. Like, that's the thing. So
does he wear all white? Does he wear white jeans?
No, he wears denim on denim.
Canadian Tuxedo.
Canadian Tuxedo at its finest.
It also sounds like Quantum Leap.
Another series that is based on Highway to Heaven.
So by Emilio Sparks' book on the history of television, we really owe everything to Michael Landon.
But the two shows that you mentioned
are very Landon.
Very Landon-esque.
Did they ever remake this show?
They're talking about doing it now. Mark Wahlberg wants to do it. Not act in it, but he wants to executive produce it.
Oh, thank God. He produces Ballers, right? Wahlberg?
Yes, and he did Entourage.
So why not have The Rock play Michael Landon's role?
Could Angels be that muscular?
I think Angels are only that muscular. You tell me this show, this premise that you just explained to me, with The Rock isn't fucking, we're printing money?
I mean, we're making it rain money.
I mean, The Rock is an angel, and every week
he already is an angel.
He goes someplace new and he fucking fixes everything.
Yeah, well, he already does that now.
Yeah, it's just like his real life.
I like how they would refer to divine prophecies in this as just like stuff. So like sometimes Jonathan would get help from God or whatever, and
the boss,
and he would go, the friend provided me with such and such materials that you needed.
Okay.
And it was just like, oh, well, okay, that's a good way to...
Now, is there magic? Like, can he, like, make shit appear?
Yes. But only if the boss deems it worthy. In this day and age where this world's a little crazy and it makes my tummy hurt, it's nice to watch something that kind of is like, hey, don't be a dick. Be a nice person. It's nice to be nice. Don't be a jerk off.
You know, in contemporary TV, there are finales and it ends the series. But often in classic television, it would just end. And yeah. I'm wondering if there's an end where he goes up to heaven and he's like, I did it, boss. And he high fives God.
Oh, I think that.
Or if it's just going to be done.
No, I think the boss is happy with Jonathan and re-gives him his wings.
I hope that's what I'm saying. Does he get his wings in the end or is it just end? Did it get picked up and it's gone forever?
Mike, if we hear a bell ring, we know Michael Landon got his wings.
Is that part of the canon of that show?
No, I'm just using that together because, you know, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings.
That was little Zuzu who said that.
Oh, Zuzu's petals.
Well, I feel like we've had a wholesome episode. We've learned something. You brought us down on a good note.
Good, I'm glad.
Do you want to do a hymn before we go?
Go bye-bye.